Oh, the fun of Facebook, huh? Welcome. We are now into the month of October, which means we're going to start a new series and literally have called this series Fake Book. Fake Book. It actually came in a conversation some people were having. You know, sometimes preachers used to do this funny little thing of setting like a box outside the sanctuary and invite people to put in suggestions as to what they want to hear a sermon on. Well, I didn't do that. I may do that in the future, but a group of people got together and they thought, oh man, this whole Facebook thing is so fake. And we just came up with a notion to call it Fake Book. So we're going to take a look at our lives, and we're going to take a look at what it means to be transparent out there before people. Now, when I started kind of Googling and trying to come up with, you know, where are we going to go with this idea of fake book, I actually found out that there was an actual book written in the year 2013 with this title, Fake Book. So it's not a new idea. In fact, the guy's name was Dave Cicirelli, and he decided in 2010 that he was going to, on Facebook, quit his job, and he was going to head west for a life journey. All of it was a lie. He wasn't going anywhere, but his digital self did. And he went off on a journey out west, an adventurous journey, a journey that a lot of people decided to take with him on Facebook. And they interacted with him, they encouraged him, they followed him, they liked him, they cheered him on this journey to just quit his job and go do something adventurous. None of it was true. Not a bit of it. Dave Cicirelli fictionalized his entire life for a year on Facebook, and people bought into it and they loved it. Now, in this endeavor, at the end of it, and when he decided to write a book about this experience, he raised a question, and I think it's a really good question. He asked, who is the real you? And what is the story that you're trying to tell others about you? Who is the real you, and what is the story that you're trying to tell others about you? We caught a glimpse of that just on that little bumper video, the image that we sometimes try to project out to other people. Is that the real you? Now, as we go into this four-week series, I don't want you to get the idea that this is going to be a series that bashes social media. It is not that. We're not trying to convince people to jump off of social media. We're not saying that social media is bad. I know there have been some preachers and churches that have said this kind of stuff. That's not the intent of this series. What we're trying to do is take a look at how we sometimes try to look like someone else, or we try to be something else that we are not. That we're not. You see, oftentimes we hide behind certain facades. Sometimes we put on masks. Sometimes we put up a really good front. And this is what we want people to see. And it may be because we don't feel really good about who we really are. We see other people's lives out there in social media, or it may not be in social media. You may see other people's lives just lived out in front of you. And we see what they're doing. We see what they look like. We see what activities that they're up to, and all of a sudden there is like this nagging that we don't measure up, that we're not good enough. And so we get this like this internal nagging that we gotta keep up with them. I mean, the phrase keeping up with the Joneses has been around for a long, long time. We want to look good. We want to put our best foot forward. We don't want to be criticized. And we want to make sure that we project our best self. But I question if that's a good thing or not. I one time read an article in a psychology journal, and they were talking about this thing that they called the approval addiction. That is, that people live almost in this bondage, so to speak, of what other people think about them. We sometimes like set our personality in motion based on what we think other people are saying about us, thinking about us, how they're looking at us. And they call this an approval addiction. So, how do you know whether you might be slipping into that? The article gave four really good points. Said, you may be subject to this approval addiction if you get hurt by what other people say about you when they express an other than glowing opinion about you, that you easily get hurt by that. You know, us preachers, we're not immune to this. I heard the story one time about a preacher. He was actually leaving the church to go to another church. He'd been there for a while, and they were doing a little goodbye reception for him. And at the reception, there was this lady, and she was just crying and crying. And he just decided to come up and put a hand on her shoulder and to comfort her and said, you know, don't be sad. I'm sure the pastor that's coming behind me will be much better than me. And she said, well, that's what they said last time, and we got you. Now, preachers are not exempt from this. So you may have this approval addiction if you're constantly worried about what people are saying about you and if they're giving a less than glowing opinion of you. You may have a little bit of this approval addiction if you habitually compare yourself to others. Social media, as we saw in that little bumper video, is a great way in which we start that comparison. We see what other people are doing. We hear about what's going on in other folks' lives, and we begin to compare ourselves to that. You may have a little bit of an approval addiction if you get envious over other people's success. And you think, golly, I just don't measure up. Or you may have a little bit of that approval addiction if you're constantly trying to impress other people, especially other people that you deem as important to you. You see, people who struggle, and I would venture to say that a lot of people struggle with this, people who struggle with this approval addiction will go to great lengths to get what they're looking for, to get that like, to get that sense of, oh yeah, people like what I'm doing, people like what I'm posting, people like what I'm saying, will go to great extents to get that approval because it feels good. And we especially do it when we're feeling a little desperate, we're feeling a little unimportant. And so we go out there and we seek that approval and we get it. But the interesting thing about this is when we get that, it doesn't last long. And the next thing that we know is that we are out looking for that approval once again. Extreme approval addiction can lead us down a bad road, however. It can lead us down the road of what I call deception. If you are constantly, incessantly wanting approval, sometimes we'll even go down the road of deception in order to get it. Dave Cicirilli, just as a fun experiment, he did that. And it worked. Even though everything he did was an absolute complete lie, Oh, he got a ton of approval and acceptance. Well, this is not a new thing. In fact, there are stories in the Bible of people constantly wanting approval. In fact, you can go all the way back to the very first book in the Bible, to some of the very first stories in the Bible. I know at Recovery here in a couple of weeks, going to be starting a new series. It's called All in the Family. And we're going to be looking through some of those stories in the book of Genesis. And we're going to find that these families in the first book of Scripture, and I'd say throughout all of Scripture, they have their issues, as all families do. Well, there's one particular story I think is absolutely fascinating. It's about two twin boys, Esau and Jacob. And it seems like from their birth, they're like constantly fighting for who's better. Esau is born, and it says Jacob was like grabbing at his heel when they were being born, because at least back in those days, there was this thing, it was called the law of primogeniture. And basically what it meant was the firstborn son received all the rights and inherited all the blessings of the father and the family. It was a big deal to be the firstborn son. And so in the story of the twins being born, Esau is being born and Jacob's grabbing at his heel as if Jacob wanted to be born first. Well, they grow up, and like in some families, one parent tended to gravitate towards one son, and the other parent gravitated towards the other son. We had Isaac, who favored his firstborn son, Esau, and mom, Rebecca, favored her secondborn son, Jacob. I don't know if you ever have had those alliances in any of your families where one is favoring the other. It happens. It happens in the best of families. So that was what was going on, and Isaac started to get old, and it was about time. Isaac knew it was about time for him to pass away. And so there was this ceremony where the father would then convey the inheritance and the blessings onto the eldest son. But Isaac, in his old days, he was becoming blind. He couldn't see, like, at all, really. If I take my contacts out, I wouldn't be able to see any of you. You would just be a bunch of blurs. I think his eyesight was even worse than that. And so it was time, though, for him to bless his favorite and oldest son, Esau. Now, Esau was a hunter. He was a manly man. He was a hairy guy. He went out and he got game and brought it back and would prepare these elaborate meals for his dad. His dad loved the food. And it was time for Esau to be blessed by Isaac. And so he called for it, but Esau happened to be out in the field, and Rebekah, Isaac's wife, said, "Jacob, he's ready to give his blessing to Esau, but you know, you want that blessing, don't you? You want your dad's approval here, don't you?" And of course, Jacob did. And so, here in this effort to receive the blessing that properly belonged with Esau in that culture, Jacob sought to get it. And what they did was they went out and they got some animal skins and put it on Jacob, because Jacob was smooth-skinned. He was not hairy like his twin brother Esau. He was smooth-skinned. And they went out and they got some animal skins and they put it on him. And then Rebecca, she knew what Isaac liked to eat. And so she prepared this meal that she knew Isaac would love. And Isaac would think, okay, my son Esau has gone out and hunted this game. He's prepared this meal for me, and he's brought it to me. And so all of this happened. This great deception happens so that Jacob can be approved and receive the blessing of his dad. So I'm going to pick up the story. It's in Genesis chapter 27. I'm going to pick it up with verse 21. Isaac said to Jacob, but Isaac thought it was Esau. Isaac said to Jacob, "Come here and let me touch you, my son." See, the blessing conveyed the laying on of hands. "Are you my son Esau or not?" So Jacob approached his father Isaac, and Isaac touched him and said, "The voice is the voice of Jacob, Jacob's voice, but the arms are Esau's arms," you know, the arms that they put the animal skins on. Isaac didn't recognize him because his arms were hairy like Esau's arms. So he blessed him. And Isaac said, "Are you really my son?" And he, Jacob, said, "I am." He was a son, but not a son Esau. You see, in order to receive that approval and that acceptance of his dad, he went to an extreme end to create a persona about himself that was not true. He deceived his father to believing that he was the eldest son. Now, can you imagine the problems this created? Esau did come back from hunting and did prepare the meal and went to his dad and said, "Dad, here you go. Now give me my blessing." He's like, "What? I already blessed you." He's like, "No, you didn't. This is me just showing up right here, right now." He's like, "Oh my goodness, I blessed somebody else. I must have blessed your brother, Jacob." Do you think Esau was good for that? It created a lot of problems. It created problems within their family. And you can imagine what happened from that point forward. You know, when we are desperately seeking approval, our concerns for what others think about us inevitably lead us down a road to attempting to shade the truth. And that's exactly what happened here with Esau and Jacob. Jacob completely shaded the truth about who he was. Well, what would end up happening is Jacob got ran off, and he went to go live with his uncle. And he lived with his uncle for a number of years and tried to get married, and his uncle had him marry somebody else that he didn't want to marry, and he had to wait there longer, and he got finally married the woman he wanted to marry, and then he found out that Esau was after him, and he had to take off from that land. I mean, we're talking 20-some years later. Jacob is on the run, living out of fear because he knew that he had duped his brother all to get his dad's blessing and acceptance. He shaded the truth. We do that. Sometimes to receive approval and to get some acceptance in our lives, we will shade the truth. You know, I like people to think that I am a very responsible person all the time. And I will have an appointment, and inevitably there are times where I will show up late. Ever shown up late for an appointment? Okay. Except when I leave late, knowing I needed to leave at a certain time, and I leave late and I'm trying to get to that appointment, I know I'm not going to make the appointment on time. Yet in my head, I'm sitting there going through every possible scenario that I can come up with to explain why I'm late. When the truth is, I just left late. Now, later in life, I've learned, you know what? It's just much better. And it's more freeing to just say, "I'm sorry I'm late. I didn't leave the office fast enough. I apologize." Instead of coming up with this elaborate scheme of, "Well, I got caught in some traffic and I hit every single red light. And then there was a cop on the interstate, so I had to drive the speed limit," which you should be doing anyways. Instead of just being honest about the situation. You know, we sometimes practice deception in order to receive approval. We desire it. But in deceiving, what you do is you begin to hide behind a facade in order to get that approval. And I don't believe for one second that this is what God desires for us. Hiding behind facades and walls that we think will make us look good is never a healthy thing. It will bring years and years and years of hurt and pain. And yet, sometimes we get really good at it. There have been some psychologists who have coined this term called the imposter phenomenon. It's an effort to describe this, you know, this effort that we make to be a little deceptive in order to come off looking good. The imposter phenomena, it happens when we know the truth about ourselves, but the image that we seek to project out about us is incongruent with the truth. Many people go through life lurking with this lurking fear that one day the truth about themselves is going to be revealed, and all of their weaknesses and all of their skeletons are going to come out into the light. Well, I'm here to tell you that that will indeed happen. The truth always comes forth. But there's parts of us that we just don't want people to know about. So oftentimes, our worth as a person is honestly confused. And we have to remember who we are. We need to understand that our approval doesn't come, and I want you to hear this, our approval doesn't come from people. Our approval comes from God. When Paul was writing a letter to the Christians in the city of Galatia, he had to emphasize this to them. And he wrote these words. He said, "Am I trying to win over human beings or God? Or am I trying to please people? If I were still trying to please people, I wouldn't be Christ's slave." Or other versions say, a servant of Christ. "Brothers and sisters, I want you to know that the gospel that I preached isn't of human origin. I didn't receive it or learn it from a human. It came through a revelation from Jesus Christ." Remember, this is the guy, Paul, formerly known as Saul, who was persecuting God's church. He was going to Christian communities, and he was arresting them, and he was convicting them, and he was putting them in prison, and sometimes he was overwatching them be killed. This was Paul. In his self-righteousness to become the best Jew there ever could be, this is what he sought to do. And then he had an experience with Jesus, a powerful experience that changed everything about his life. And he learned it's not about what he could do for himself. It wasn't about the image that he could create to make himself look good. He learned that his approval and his self-worth comes from God and God alone. And yet we still struggle with this whole image thing, that we want people to think that we're this or we're that. Social media is just one of the platforms in which we do that in. But we forget that God has already called us his own. He's approved us. He has loved us. He sent his son into this world to die for us and for the world so that we may know that we are loved. Loved. Loved to death by God. That's where our approval comes from. And that's what Paul was trying to convey. Our approval does not come from people. It doesn't come from human beings. It comes from God and God alone. As I say, we preachers, again, are not perfect in this. There's a story that the late Dr. Fred Craddock, who actually preached in these parts of East Tennessee. He went to school at Johnson Bible College. There's a preaching series that's held there at the college. Johnson Bible University. Johnson University. Thank you. And the preaching conference is done in his name every year. A great, great preacher. He got his doctorate, ended up becoming a professor at Candler School of Theology, which is associated with Emory University down in Atlanta. And he tells a story one time of a student of his that preached a sermon in his preaching class. If you go to seminary, you're going to have to go through a preaching class, and you're going to have to preach sermons in front of your peers and in front of your professor. And what happens then is you are critiqued. You know, they listen to your sermon, and they make some notes, and then there's a reflection time after you're done preaching, and the professor puts their input in there, and then you get your grade. And he said, this one young man, I listened to him, and I gave him a C. He said, I thought it was a pretty good grade, seeing that I didn't think what he said was good, and I didn't like the way he presented it. So I thought a C was pretty good. And the young man was very disappointed in the grade. Well, a couple weeks later, about 3 weeks later, this young man, he came back to Dr. Craddock, and he took that sermon, and he slammed it down on Dr. Craddock's desk. And he looked him right in the eye and said, I went home and I preached this sermon to my home congregation and I got a standing ovation. And Dr. Craddock raised the notion, are we seeking the approval of people here? Or do we seek the approval of God? We're called to glorify God. God has called us into a relationship with Him. And by the very nature of God doing that, God has approved you, has approved me, has called me, called you His child, and loves you like a father and like a mother loves a son or daughter. That is how God feels for you. You are approved. You don't have to seek the approval of anybody else. You are loved. That changes everything. It changes everything. The first king of Israel, his name was King Saul. Apparently he was a man of great stature, tall, good-looking, strong. And God called him to be the very first king. And he was doing great. But all of a sudden, at some point in his kingship, you start reading this phrase that he would say, well, you know what? The people are saying this. The people said that. And he would begin to change his leadership based on what people were saying about him. God had called him. God had blessed him. God had established him as the first king. But all of a sudden, he quit listening to God's voice and he started listening to what the people said. And it wasn't long that Saul lost his kingship. Now, some people have a lot of different opinions as to why he lost that kingship. But I sometimes wonder if it was just because he quit believing that God had called him and had loved him and approved him to be the king. And he was going after public opinion and trying to get people to approve him. Jesus took a very different road. Jesus found himself in a difficult spot. Based on some of the things he had been teaching, based on some of the people that he healed, the people that he hung out with, Jesus had some criticisms leveled against him. He could have taken care of that. He could have just appeased them. He could have said, oh, well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you don't like what I'm doing. Let me see if we can make that right. But Jesus didn't do that because Jesus stood in the firm belief that he is in God's grace and in God's love. Thank you.